the online registration, what's the use of that, and do you need to register online in order to get testing?
So again, this is part of the, I guess, trial process. This specific testing has the advantages of online registration. We are developing a on-site registration piece, but we also want to see, again, using this type of testing, what are the advantages and disadvantages.
Okay, to having the online pre-registration.
Correct.
Let's say the online registration thing goes well. Would there ever be a situation in which you need to register online to access testing in Delaware?
So this is tied to the test, the online. I think that's one of the efficiencies attached to this test. I know that not everyone can register online, but we have other testing modalities to address other access barriers, whether it's email or internet access, or it's transportation barriers as well too. So we have many different strategies for testing, and depending on what the focus is, that will lead to the type of testing we will provide.
Okay. And regarding the general increase in testing plan of ramping up to 80,000 tests per month, can you just stress what were the bottlenecks to getting to that point, and how are you eliminating them now to be able to increase?
I think the main challenges, and this is experienced by other states, is just having the testing supplies available. The supply chain was an issue, but we're very fortunate that we've been working closely with our partners as well as the federal government to open up those supply chains. So really, I think our major challenge was getting supplies into the state.
Okay, and I know having the capacity and supplies to process the tests is one thing, and then having like the manpower to administer the tests is another. Were those also limiting factors or less so?
I think we've been fortunate enough with Delaware that we have a close relationship with our healthcare partners, whether they're health systems, whether they're FQHCs, whether they're volunteer groups. That staffing was not necessarily an issue, but you are correct that from the supply chain perspective, it's not just the specimen collection kits or the swabs. It's also the reagents need to process the test in the lab. So there are many factors involved. Staffing, I think, is a smaller component of the challenges that we've encountered versus some of the other issues that probably played a bigger role, such as supplies.
One thing I was curious about with the saliva-based tests, it sounds like it would be less labor-intensive to administer. Do you necessarily need one nurse to be administering every test?
So we would like to provide a healthcare worker on site to provide any guidance as needed. We do have educational materials to allow the client to swab by himself or herself. So there are videos available. There's paper instruction forms as well too. So we're doing everything we can to help the client succeed in getting a good enough specimen for testing.
So I guess can one healthcare worker administer more tests when it's the saliva one versus the nasopharyngeal one?
So the healthcare worker in this process is really just to be available as needed. Since the clients are self-swabbing, you don't need a healthcare provider involved in every single specimen collection versus the nasopharyngeal or the oropharyngeal swab collection, where a healthcare provider needs to be involved in every interaction.
So on the curative tests, how accurate do you see these tests being compared to the PCR test you were using before?
So that's a good question. So any new test method that we are interested in acquiring, we go through our internal validation process. Regardless, there's an EUA already in place or not, we want to see how it works. There are other factors involved. It's not just whether it's accurate, but can we implement effectively and efficiently. This test has gone through other validation, has gone through a validation process that every other test that we acquire have gone through as well too. And it did comparatively well with our PCR testing, so we're very comfortable in its accuracy.
Okay. Can you give me a sense for whether the different types of testing that DPH is deploying now, are there ones that you're more concerned with false negatives versus false positives or anything like that?
Yeah, I think across the board, just because it's a PCR test, that all of them have a false negative rate, and we are very concerned that might impact the outcome of the results. So, healthcare providers are very well aware that the clinical judgment is still very important in diagnosing COVID-19, that we do need our clinical providers involved in that process. So it's not simply negative, you're fine, and positive, you're not fine. There needs to be that clinical judgment piece and that interpretation of the test.
So are the curative saliva-based tests versus the nose or oral throat swab, are they processed in the same way and use the same reagents? And it's just a different collection method?
No, so that's a very good question. So one of the reasons why we liked the curative test is they uses a totally different process. So we're not competing with our own cells, with ourselves, in terms of using the similar reagents that we need for the other tests. So that's why it's such a great method that we adopt in Delaware. So it uses a different lab. It uses different reagents. It's a different way of processing. So we can continue to maximize our capacity in our state lab, in our hospital labs, as well as the commercial labs we're dealing with right now. So it just adds to our capability. It does not compete with our capabilities.
And what lab is going to be processing the curative ones?
So it's their own lab. It's in Washington, D.C.
And what's the turnaround time?
So, you know, turnaround time, they, you know, 24 hours, very similar to what we can do state lab. One of the limiting factors will be when they receive the specimens. But once the specimens are received, it can be processed fairly quickly in a couple hours or so.
And I guess that piece about how fast will they be able to receive them is to be seen.
Yeah, and that's why we do want to do this pilot project and, you know, appreciate Nanticoke, who is our hospital partner on this, that we're going to see exactly the logistical piece of it, how to get the specimen collected, can clients do it successfully on their own, are the educational materials effective, how to get it to the lab, and how the reports get received by us as well as the patient, the client. So all this is being looked at. You know, our validation process really just looks at the accuracy, but there's so many other pieces in the testing process.
Mm-hmm. Looking bigger picture at the whole testing plan of that 80,000 per month goal, how would that be distributed geographically? How much employer-based or hospital-based or community event-based?
So it's a good question. And, you know, we are looking at priorities. There's always a prioritization process to determine who gets tested first. So we may look at, you know, focus on healthcare providers still. You know, we are looking at universal testing in long-term care facilities. We're looking at frontline workers, so those that cannot social distance in essential businesses is also a key factor. Also vulnerable populations like our migrant farm workers, homeless population as well. So we're kind of not focused on one particular aspect because I think there are many vulnerabilities and challenges with each population that I listed. So we want to make sure we have a testing strategy for each group.
Do you have a plan in terms of this amount going to be allocated to this group, X is going to be allocated to this county?
So I think the allocation is not based on percentage of the test. It's really based on what test method fits best for that situation. So there are certain situations where the saliva-based test modality would be better because the fact is, you know, you may have a population that has more online access. Maybe we don't need as many healthcare providers or workers involved in that process. So there's definitely advantages to that versus the other test processes where the hospitals are very comfortable and familiar with the nasopharyngeal swab testing, so they may stick with that. They have healthcare providers and staffing available at those sites. So, you know, again, it's going to be like determining the logistical pieces to each type of test method and linking that to the appropriate populations.
As of now, what's the criteria for testing?
So at this point, there are many different types of criteria. We are still focusing on symptomatic clients, but we also understand the risk for asymptomatic spread, particularly in certain vulnerable populations, such as the long-term care facilities. Also, we're concerned about the ability or inability to follow infection control measures. So those that cannot social distance at home, for instance, or those that have other barriers to allow them to protect themselves and their family safely. So it's not just about illness, it's also the ability to limit transmission of disease, and that's also a priority.
Mm-hmm. How much discretion does the healthcare worker doing the test have?
Good question. So certain sites have different screening processes. So certain sites are geared more towards certain populations, and at other sites, for instance, when DPH sets up a community site, typically that's for anyone who wants to be tested. But hospitals, they have a different mission, and they may be focused more on symptomatic cases. So, you know, that's why we have our website on www.de.gov/coronavirus. We do have a testing website, so it kind of gives you explanation of each site's capability. Again, depending on the population, it's also going to impact the logistics of it. For instance, you don't want to mix sick people with not sick people because that's going to induce spread. So we do ask the public to be very careful of which site you're going to, and please review the testing website available.